This is David Duke, broadcasting to the world on Web Radio. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke International Live Internet Web Radio broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent wherever they may live upon the globe. The last couple of days, we've been discussing the issues of free speech. We've been discussing the fact that so many Western governments and other governments around the world are becoming more and more repressive against any sort of free thought, against any sort of ability for people to debate issues. Freedom of speech is not necessary, or the rights of freedom of speech, or the protection of freedom of speech is not necessary for popular opinion. Obviously, it's only important to suppress unpopular opinion. It's only important to make sure that we protect the freedom of opinion that exists in opposition to established thought, principle, practice, or against popular power or governmental power. We have a huge media power today. We have incredibly large media conglomerates worth tens of billions of dollars that basically have a domination over what we hear and see in the media. And what these media masters, these unelected masters, have is the power to determine fashion. It's the power to determine what beliefs are commonly held or popular or what beliefs are not. What beliefs are categorized as terroristic or hateful are vicious, and what beliefs that are categorized as loving and decent. Just even the word terrorism is an interesting point of view. Let's take a look at that word and see how media can deal with that word and portray anyone they want to portray, or any nation they want to portray as a peaceful nation, and other nations as a, quote, terrorist nation. Let's just take the Iraq War, for instance. Or let's take Israel. There's so many examples we can give to it. The Palestinians, the organization Hamas, is called a terrorist organization, and Palestinians are routinely called terrorists. Resistance fighters in Iraq, those who are resisting American military occupation, are often called terrorists, per se. Now, what exactly is terrorism? Well, first off, let me make it really clear so no one can misjudge my statements here. I'm opposed to any sort of terrorism, any sort of action that leads to the mass murder of thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of innocent men, women, and children. I find that abhorrent. I think there's a better way that we can solve the problems of this world other than going to that kind of reality. But let me tell you something. A bomb, a high-powered, either phosphorus or napalm-type weapon or simply concussion weapon that is dropped in a neighborhood or dropped in a village or dropped in a town or dropped in a communication center has to be a terrorist act the same as, say, the bombing of the World Trade Center in New York. The World Trade Center bombing was an abhorrent act, and I think whoever did that act, and those who committed that act, they should be hunted down, and they should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, and I believe in my heart that they should pay the ultimate price. But let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. Bombing a building in New York with people in the central center, I guess, of the American economic and communications and financial empire, and bombing a building in Baghdad that's housing the communication center for Saddam Hussein's Iraq or the television stations for Saddam Hussein's Iraq, they're both terrorist acts. Innocent people are killed. approximately 100,000. In fact, that may be a conservative figure. It may be a little high. We don't know, but it's at least in the tens of thousands. Tens of thousands of Iraqi civilians have been killed. Now, we can say that our motives are good, that because we've had good motives, we wanted to overthrow the terrible regime or repressive regime, or we wanted to protect or defend the United States, that we did made these bombings and caused these civilian casualties. I guess it's called collateral damage these days. That can be an argument. And that is an argument that our government constantly uses. But at the same time, you see, the terrorists right now and the Islamic Jihad and the Al-Qaeda, they have good arguments too, don't they? They have arguments. They say America violated the Iraq, that they invaded Iraq, and admittedly for a lie, that they broke every sort of international regulation. You see, their motives can certainly be attested to and argued for among themselves, as our motives can be argued for. The bottom line is that terrorism is something that causes or costs the lives of innocent people in great, great numbers. And our invasion of Iraq has done that even more so. And I guess my main concern is not the civilians of another country, because, you know, I believe everyone's concern honestly starts at home. It's kind of like the person that says, I love all children, I love all families in the world. Well, that's not quite fair to your own children, is it? You know, it's great that a child knows that his parents love him or her over all other children. And I do love my fellow American people and my European people from which we've sprung. I love them or ever want to harm any others, but I certainly love my own people, and I want to preserve my heritage and my values, and the interests of my people come first. So my first issue, maybe, perhaps, with the Iraq War is the fact that Americans are dying in great numbers. In fact, more Americans have been wounded by and maimed. I'm talking about crippled, blinded, emasculated, amputated limbs, terribly disfigured. Many are brain dead. There's also been a lot of psychological damage. They say that one-third, the Pentagon's own study says that one-third of American soldiers are coming back with serious mental problems that require professional care. That's a maiming. That's, you know, and let me tell you something. Those Americans that serve in this theater of war where they can't win, where they're fighting a war that's not been for America, but really was fought for Israel under the auspices of people like Paul Wolfowitz and Richard Pearl, these men, and so many of them, have faced terror. It is terrifying, ladies and gentlemen, to suffer a bomb attack, or to have your friends, see your friend have his body blown in half, or to see your own hand laying there on your ground, or after the explosion, not being able to see and having the feeling that you'll never see again. You'll never see your wife or child again. You'll never see the beauty of a sunset or a sunrise. You'll never be able to read a book. You'll never be able to watch a film. You'll never be able to see your love. You know, it's, ladies and gentlemen, that's terror. And terror can be inflicted by all sorts of means and processes, and we have to realize and have to understand, if we're going to end the terror and this incredible cataclysmic war that we're headed toward in the world, we've got to start to realize the fuel for these fires, the you know, what's really happening in the world. We have a government right now, instead of de-escalating this conflict, is escalating it. That's a fact. We are causing millions and millions of people around the world to hate us. Now, the Iraqis and Saddam Hussein did not ever do anything against the United States of America. By the way, Israel has. Israel attacked the USS Liberty. Israel bombed American installations in Egypt during the Levant affair. In fact, Israel had a recent ceremony in this last year, recognizing the terrorists who attacked America as heroes. Israel has stolen our secrets, such as the Jonathan Pollard affair. We have high-ranking members of APAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. who are on trial very soon for espionage and damage to the American secrets and American security. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, we have a situation where we've got to begin to look and see who is defining what we call a terrorist, who's defining what we call a racist, what we call a hater, and all the rest of it. Another good example, I've been hearing a lot with these cartoons, and I've heard from both, you know, many, many sides in this thing, and I'm glad to see that many people in the West are defending the right of this paper to print cartoons, whether you agree with them or not. And the idea that the Danish government should be held responsible because an independent newspaper printed some cartoon and editorial thought, but however provocative it was, the reason that government should be attacked for that is just absolutely insane. And I will tell the Muslims who I know and who I am and friendly with that this attack against Denmark is really kind of insane. You know, if you're going to go around the world and you're going to attack everybody who said a bad word about you or about your religion or even contested an aspect of your religion, you're going to be in war with everybody. You're going to have perpetual war. And if you ever do succeed in conquering, if your religion succeeds in having total control over a society or the world, you're going to have a society where anyone who has any differing opinion, not simply even a heretic in a real sense, but someone simply with a differing interpretation of this, a strongly different interpretation, could be accused of heresy or accused of being anti-Muslim and face the dungeon. We saw demonstrators in London, you know, radical demonstrators talking about how that those who did these cartoons and so forth should be beheaded, that they should be murdered, that they should be killed. You know, this is going on right now. These people were placards in the street while the Muslims are a relatively small percentage of the population in Great Britain. But that, you know, but see, ladies and gentlemen, doesn't it make sense? I mean, that why we should want to preserve our country and preserve our heritage and preserve the percentage of our people as they are? This is the kind of problems that erupt. Different countries, different religions have very different precepts. Look at the incredible religious conflict that's existed, for instance, in the nation of India between the Hindus and the Muslims. Incredible. I can't tell you how many tens of thousands of people have died. Wars, of course, have erupted because of it with the Pakistan-India split. Families have been destroyed. Just we can go on and on and on. Great works of art have been destroyed. You know, when you have societies that are so-called multicultural, or societies that are undergo a tremendous ethnic and social and religious change, you have incredible tensions and incredible problems. Even the differences between the Christian religion in terms of Protestant and Catholics. Look at that scenario in Northern Ireland. Of course, you combine something in Northern Ireland. You combine a political situation, and that was the British maltreatment of Ireland for so many centuries. And you combine the ethnic situation with the ethnic Scots in Northern Ireland, for instance, and as compared to the native Irish. And then you have the religious thing mixed in as well. And when you have all those elements together, especially when you have religious and ethnic together, the potential for problems are enormous. And any fool can see this. It's only someone who's been basically brainwashed by the mass media for so long. They can't see this. And that's exactly my point here, ladies and gentlemen. Our mass media is controlled. We don't have freedom of speech in the United States and in Great Britain and in Europe. Oh, yes, somebody could put out a little flyer. It's 8.5-inch by 11-inch flyer, you know, or an A1 piece of paper in Europe. And you can put out a paper occasionally. In fact, in some things in Europe, you can't. You know, you could put out a flyer, maybe, with an Islamic cartoon on it. You sure can't put out a flyer in some way questioning the Holocaust or making satire of it or satire of the Holocaust historians. That's against the law. And it's so ironic that we have a situation where we have a lot of journalists around the world defending Denmark, and we also see people like President Bush saying nothing to defend Denmark. And the American government's position did not really defend Denmark. Jack Straw, that great Jewish supremacist, said nothing to defend Denmark. We have so many factors going on here, but I can tell you, when it all gets down to the basics, there's no more important issue than freedom of speech. And freedom of speech must exist for any idea and every idea. Now, the other side of this question, and the other interesting aspect of it, is I think that these cartoons were a provocation, and they were intentional. Because I believe that Mr. Fleming, who's very close to the neocons, I think Pipes is one of the people he stayed with, who's one of the leading neocon activists in the United States of America and thinkers, I think they did this intentionally to inflame this problem. And what they're trying to do, they're trying to work toward this World War IV, what they call World War IV scenario. Now, this was talked about by the editor of Commentary magazine, and he proudly talks about it. We want World War IV. And that scenario goes like this, that you had World War I, World War II, World War III was the Cold War, and World War IV is the, quote, clash of civilizations. And they feel that Jewish supremacism and the Jewish extremists will benefit from this war, just as Israel is the prime beneficiary of the Iraq War. The Iraq War was fought from Israel from day one. It was fought by leading activists for Israel, not fought by them, but promoted by them. Mr. Pearl, Mr. Wolfowitz, in fact, Mr. Pearl and others wrote a paper from Benjamin Netanyahu, one of the most radical. Talk about terrorists. And that's another example of terrorism. You know, why is not Ariel Sharon referred to as a terrorist? Now, he's sick right now. That doesn't let him off the hook. I mean, he has murdered many, many thousands of innocent people and committed terrible war crimes against innocent people in Lebanon and many other places in the Middle East. And he oversaw the mass murder at Sabra and Shatila. You know, again, terrorist. Again, it's the definition, it seems to be, by the media. Today, they're trying to conflate. They're trying to bring together the terms terrorist and being, quote, anti-Semitic or being opposed to Israel. And I think that's two different issues. You can certainly be opposed to Israel and opposed to Jewish supremacism and not be a terrorist. In fact, I would argue again that the greatest supremacists in the world are the Jewish supremacists. Israel is a racial supremacist state, and it's a segregated state between Jews and Arabs. In fact, even the land that they're occupying from the Palestinians, they're not just coming in there and saying, we're going to buy up your property and we're going to move into your neighborhoods and we're going to create settlements. They're creating segregated settlements. They're basically confiscating the land of the Palestinians and then stealing it and then making these settlements only available for people of Jewish descent. And you notice I didn't say Jewish religion, because you don't have to be a Jew by religion to live in these settlements. You just have to be a Jew by heritage, be of the Jewish tribe, so to speak. So, ladies and gentlemen, we have a tremendous double standard. Let's talk some about the free speech in relationship to what's going on with the, for instance, with David Irving in Europe, because we've got some very crazy things going on right now, and I think it's so important. I read an editorial by Cinnamon Stillwell from one of the major papers in the United States, and I think this is from the I think it's in the San Francisco paper, and let me make sure I got that right. I don't want to mess this up. SanFranciscoGate.com. And he says, a worldwide battle for free speech is taking place with Denmark at the center of the storm. And he goes on to talk about it, and he said the cartoons themselves were a mixed bunch. Some merely depicted Muhammad as a man, which is by no means a historical first. Other, more provocative drawings alluded to the realities of terrorism and misogyny in the Muslim world. And he goes on and he talks about other, you know, aspects. And the response so far has included demands for apologies and censorship, violent protests, Danish flag burning, and attacks on Danish aid workers, diplomats, and embassies, as well as terrorist warnings and death threats. And he goes on down. It's a pretty interesting paper. And what I thought was interesting by it, where he talks about European media has been across Europe, newspaper after newspaper, this is a quote, has expressed solidarity with Jyllands Posten, that's the paper that media conglomerate that printed these cartoons, by printing the cartoons of this writing papers in Norway, Germany, Spain, Italy, Holland, the Czech Republic, Switzerland, Hungary, have all followed suit. Going further, a Moscow museum is showing its support of free speech by exhibiting the entire series of Muhammad cartoons in the upcoming show. The cartoons are also reprinted in the French newspaper Francois, although the editor was fired a day later by the French-Egyptian owner, also suffering the same fate where the two brave editors who reprinted several of the drawings in Grenadian newspapers both have been arrested under Jordan's press and publications law. While newspapers in New Zealand and Australia reprinted the cartoons and the BBC has aired them on television, American media is still coming around. After months of reporting the story without reprinting the cartoons, a select few are beginning to do so. Now, I want to just note something in here, again, talking about Holocaust revisionism. And by the way, I don't call myself a Holocaust revisionist. I don't even call myself a Holocaust denier or a Holocaust... You know, I guess I'm a questioner in many ways in the sense that I think there's got to be free speech and free debate on this issue. And now think for a second. Let me just ask you a question. Imagine for a moment that any newspaper, any single newspaper in Europe, in France, which, by the way, which has laws, they prosecute anyone who even contests any of the verdicts at Nuremberg or who questions any aspect of that, who deviates one line, one iota, one period, one exclamation mark, one question mark from the text at Nuremberg. They prosecute anyone who says who will reduce the numbers of some aspect of the Holocaust by one. They will do it if they argue any aspect or any truth of the Holocaust whatsoever. They will prosecute and sue. They'll break the person. They will take away his property, his money. They will put him in prison. And, of course, that person is already subject to being attacked by these Jewish extremists. Now, if one of these papers in France, a major paper, ran a cartoon just questioning some aspects of the Holocaust, like, for instance, showing the Holocaust promoters as a dog trainer and the public as a poodle jumping through the hoop. I saw a cartoon recently of that nature. And this is the gullible public. You know, if somebody just ran a simple cartoon like that, a very... uncomplicated, no hatred, no viciousness or whatever. Do you think, not only would that paper probably be shut down and prosecuted in many European countries, but the truth is, do you think that museums would be showing this paper, showing these cartoons? Do you think other papers would be printing these cartoons in solidarity with it? You know, we've got a tremendously hypocritical media right now in the world. What I say, and I say this, with a great deal of reluctance, I say that the problem, and what the media is trying to say is, well, these cartoons should be allowed. Well, the truth is that anything should be allowed. I mean, your ideas and issues should be allowed. Now, I'm not an advocate for open and free pornography. I am not an advocate of that. And I believe that pornography is something quite different than political thought and process. And our forefathers, who gave us our Declaration of Independence, who gave us our values all the way up until the 1960s, 1970s, just a twinkling of an eye, really, historically, recognized the fact. They recognized complete freedom of speech, opinion, and expression on political, social, and religious issues. They also, ladies and gentlemen, recognized that pornographic materials are extreme sick pornographic material was not a question of freedom of speech and press. And they were always able to distinguish quite easily between the two. It's only been in very recent years. And now we have the ironic thing where you get some of this sick pornography, which is everything including sadomasochism and human defecation. I mean, it's just unbelievable. That's available in almost any Western nation of the world. But if you try to print a book that questions any aspect of the Holocaust, or you try to print a book that exposes some of the Jewish supremacism, as my book has, you're subject to absolute suppression. A good example is in Canada, where my book, Jewish Supremacism, and anybody who's read it knows that the book is dedicated to a Jewish activist himself. He's dead now. His name is Israel Shahak, Dr. Israel Shahak, a man who survived the concentration camps, the Second World War in German concentration camps. It is a book that is well documented, and it's a book that simply shows and proves the extremist element that exists among the Jewish political state of Israel and among the Jewish community around the world, and the dangers that this extremist group of Jews pose, not only to the world, but to themselves as well. That's what my book does. Well, the book is documented, and it's certainly enlightened. There's not a hateful word, I think, in it. I think anybody who read my book would have to agree with that. The nation of Canada has banned my book. They seize my book when they can at the border, and after they seize the book, by the way, they give notice, and then they burn the book. They destroy the book. Modern-day book burning. Where's the outcry about freedom of speech there, ladies and gentlemen? And the truth is, as I said in my program yesterday, we basically have two extremist viewpoints fighting with each other. We've got the Jewish extremist viewpoint, which seem to dominate the West. You know, one writer, in fact, I just quoted from the interesting gentleman, Cinnamon Stillwell. He said something very interesting. Let me give you a little quote here which shows kind of the incredible bias. If compared to the body of criticism and satire connected to Western religion, the cartoons were downright tame. Government subsidized art in the West using human urine and elephant dung to depict Jesus Christ and the Virgin Mary come to mind. And I want you to notice something, ladies and gentlemen, that government subsidized art in the West using human urine and elephant dung to depict Jesus Christ and the Virgin Mary. Let me ask you, what type of art of that nature would ever be permitted in terms of exposing Jewish extremism and Jewish supremacism? You know, I think the answer to that question shows that even this editorial itself is way off base. Yes, it's true that this Danish publication should be able to run whatever cartoons they want about any subject that they want. It's also true that they, in Denmark even, cannot do that if they confront the problem of Jewish supremacism. So we have a lot of hypocrisy going on here on both sides. Now, the last thing I want to comment about this whole question is, as I said, World War IV is rapidly approaching, and this is how they work it out. Let me tell you how they try to create a series of provocations, get response. And this is an age-old tactic of the Jewish supremacists. As you know, in the days preceding American involvement in the Second World War, the Jewish supremacists obviously wanted this war. In fact, they wanted it across Europe for their own reasons. They hated the National Socialist regime in Germany. It was an anti-Jewish regime, obviously. It was a regime that absolutely broke Jewish economic power in Germany. It also had a big impact on the trade policies between Germany and other nations, international trade, because Germany went into a barter system rather than a financial system through some of the international banks that had a lot of Jewish influence. And, for whatever reasons, and of course the Jews had some valid reasons, they hated Hitler, they hated the Germans, and they wanted a war. They wanted to destroy this country, and they worked very, very hard to promote war in Great Britain and France and other nations and Poland and other nations around the world. They did whatever they could. And one way they did it was with a series of provocations in return. Now, in America, we had a very clear record of how they did it, and with the many Zionists around Roosevelt. In America, they did it very simply and very, very clearly. The Japanese, of course, were in their own conflict in Manchuria and in the East. We proceeded to make all kinds of demands on the Japanese in the late 1930s and into the very early 40s. Japan is a nation with no oil, no resources, and we basically told Japan that they can't have these lands and the other lands where they had these resources. We tried to cut off Japan. We tried to cut off their support. We tried to dictate to them. And we would do a provocation, and then Japan would come back, and then they would say, make a provocation, and we'd make a provocation. And this grew and grew and grew until finally it resulted in Pearl Harbor. We did the same thing with Saddam Hussein in the preceding days before this last and incredible war that's still waging today. You know, we would make statements against Saddam, he'd make statements against us. We did this. The same thing is going on right now in the Iran controversy. And that's what they're doing right now with this World War IV. You know, they are trying to inflame the Arab world against us, and they're trying to inflame us against them to promote this war. And they are doing a damn good job of it. The media is doing it. You know, and again, I question the background of this Mr. Fleming. You know, I think that he purposely did these cartoons because not to cause light of freedom of speech. If you want to do that, why didn't you take some of the from some of the major Holocaust revisionists that exist, not only in Scandinavia but all over the world, and print some of their cartoons or some of their ideas or some of their articles in their paper and say we're going to have freedom of speech here. No, it wasn't a test about freedom of speech. It was to try to inflame this process. And then, of course, the Arabs and the Muslims around the world reacted to this, and they did their own provocation, their own attacks, you know, on the Danes and other facilities and so forth. And then that, in turn, has caused many denunciations and attacks. And we have this cycle going more and more and more until, ladies and gentlemen, there'll be massive bloodshed on all sides. Instead of de-escalating this thing, we are acerbating it. You know, the first thing I think Europe's got to do and America's got to do is we've got to, first off, stop this massive immigration into our countries. We need to repatriate people who are here from other nations. Reward them, absolutely. If, you know, give them due compensation for whatever. Help them get a good start in their own lands. They love their own lands, I think. And but let's make Europe European again and America American again, and that's the first thing we're going to do. If Denmark was all European, there wouldn't have been this problem. It was the fact that there is a vocal community in Denmark that wanted to have this problem. Secondly, Europe has got to stop supporting the Jewish supremacist state of Israel and the incredible crimes it's committed, and we've got to stop going in and fighting wars for Israel. You know, we've got to treat the nations of the world decently and honorably. We must defend ourselves and protect ourselves. But if we actually preserve our heritage in our respective countries and we have a decent military, we certainly can defend and will defend this nation from any sort of dangerous attack or threat from around the world. The big threat that we've got, of course, is increased terrorism, and we are fanning the flames for that. And the thing that makes that terrorism possible in terms of the Western countries is the immigration. Without immigration and without the open borders we have, we wouldn't have that particular problem. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's my comments for the day. I hope you found it, found the program interesting, and I do look forward to being with you. I don't think I'm going to be able to be with you tomorrow. We'll probably play an archive show. I'll be doing some more traveling then. But I certainly hope to talk to you soon and share with you a lot more of the incredible issues, the important issues facing our people. And we are in a crisis indeed. We are facing a destruction of every aspect of our society, our culture, and our way of life. We have got to work together and fight hard for the principles that we believe in. And one thing we do believe in, of course, is freedom of speech and freedom of press. Thanks, and I'll see you all tomorrow.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddude.com.